Racing drivers are never satisfied and they never give up on a challenge. Colton Herta, IndyCar star, IndyCar race winner, and surely a champion of the future, isn't happy with that path. For many years, he's been chasing Formula One. He came close before, and he thought he'd missed his moment.
It was disappointing. You know, when that didn't happen, I was like, look, okay, probably won't have another opportunity. And then this came around, and I was like, geez, count my lucky stars.
Cadillac have given him a chance. But if he's going to drive for them in F1, he's got to earn it. He knows that means putting the work in.
My goal of coming over here and doing F2 is to prepare myself to be a Formula One driver the best I can with Cadillac in mind. Having this opportunity to try to get there and try to achieve that dream and that goal of being a Formula One driver is very easy for me to say yes to.
Hello everyone, I'm Tom Clarkson and this is F1 Beyond the Grid and a chat with one of the most intriguing drivers in the paddock today. What Colton Herta is doing is so unusual, walking away from a successful IndyCar career to try and work his way up from Formula 2 to Formula 1. That's going to be tough. F2 is a difficult category and Colton's having to learn a new way of driving. As Cadillac's test driver, he'll get to drive their F1 car in practice sessions this year, but he wants to prove that he belongs on a Grand Prix grid. We talk about Colton's love of motorsport, watching his dad, Indy legend Brian Herta, racing when he was just a few weeks old, moving to Europe as a teenager to race alongside Lando Norris, and his determination to get to F1. Colton is committed and he's a true racer. I think you'll enjoy getting to know him. Colton, thanks for your time. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to Blighty. Welcome to England.
Yeah, thank you.
We're speaking at Silverstone at Cadillac's HQ, where you're having a seat fit in the MAC 26. Look, are you snug in there? How comfortable are you in the car?
It's definitely like a pinch me moment, like a realization of like how close it is and how close to driving it is. But yeah, getting comfortable.
Is the process the same, every seat fit, whether it's an Indy car, a sports car, a Formula One car, is the process the same?
I think at this point, generally, yes. You know, you either use some form of two-part foam or a bead seat, then you get it shipped off to go get it scanned and make it lighter, basically. And I think that's pretty general across all the stuff that I've done so far.
Is the driving position in Formula One different to what you've experienced before?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think for the most part, the European open wheel cars are different to the US open wheel cars, apart from a few in the US. But if you look at a lot of the European cars, you know, where your legs are, the car kind of bumps up quite a bit and comes up. So your feet are raised quite a bit compared to the Indy car. So I would say the back positioning is similar, but your feet are a little bit higher and the visibility is a little bit less because of that, because the tub comes up on the front a bit more.
So are you lying down more?
Maybe a little bit, but I would say the back positioning and how the back starts to come up is similar. It's just a little bit of a different feel because you got your legs up here instead of maybe down here.
Yeah. And what are your particular preferences? Do you like to be close to the wheel? Where do you want the pedals?
You know, I think it depends. One, I would say generally pretty normal and average compared to a lot of drivers. But the only thing that's weird about me is I don't like to run a heel rest. And that's because when I push the pedal, instead of going on like this, I actually push with my toes. And so my heel comes up. And so if I run a heel rest, then I can't get forward with my heel. Kind of stops it. So
that's so interesting.
There's one weird thing about me. Well, there's probably a lot, one of them.
What is it about your toes? Why do you?
I don't know. I think it's something that I picked up in karting, and it's been like that ever since.
Do you have a lot of throttle travel?
No, everything else is pretty normal about how I set the car up.
Okay,
but that's one weird thing. I can run a heel rest. It never gets used because my heel ends up just flying over the thing.
The reason you're having the seat fit, and you alluded to it earlier, is that Cadillac have just announced that you're going to be doing 4 FP1s for the team this year, starting in Barcelona, which
is
a great racetrack to kick it all off. Mm-hmm. But how much are you looking forward to that?
I mean, so much. You know, I think it's always my goal of coming over here and doing this and doing F2 is to prepare myself to be a Formula One driver the best I can, and with Cadillac in mind, right? So it's cool to see that kind of coming together. You know, my first taste of the car in Barcelona is going to be super special. You know, that's a place that a lot of us drivers know really well. You know, basically all of winter testing, right, in Formula One for a long time has taken place in Spain or Portugal. And when it's in Spain, it's usually at Barcelona. But people don't tell you that when it's cheaper to run in race cars in F4 and F3, even in F2, basically all your testing happens in Barcelona, or about 80% of it through the winter. So it's a place that's somewhat familiar to me. You know, still, I haven't been back there since 2016, so 10 years ago. But the track hasn't changed too much. We had a little bit of a different layout.
I think the last two corners
last
are now
two corners,
quick
but
now.
I'll take that. You know, there's a lot of places that I haven't been to, and I have to learn, you know, 20 corners. So if I have to relearn two corners, I'll take that. That's fine. You know, some of the curb profiling changes and you know, some of the abrasions on the tracks or bumps might change here or there. But for the most part, it's a place that I'll be pretty comfortable with, I think. And yeah, looking forward to it. I'm super excited for it. It's going to be super cool.
You've done a lot of testing in your time. You're an IndyCar race winner. Do you expect the rhythm of a practice session in Formula One to be different to what you've experienced before?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always going to be different, no matter what you step into, whether it's like for the first time for me stepping into like the BMW GTP car or the Cadillac GTP or the IndyCar or Indy Lights car. Everything has its little nuances and differences and run plans and how the car is. And most of it's kind of dictated by the tire. Whereas in Formula One, you see a lot more push, cool, push kind of sequences rather than maybe an IndyCar, you might get two pushes in a row. So stuff like that might be a little bit different. You know, you have to charge the battery a lot more when you're doing these push, cool, push sequences. So there will be some differences and the car will feel different. But at the end of the day, it's still an engine and four tires, and you have to try to go as fast as possible, and you kind of learn by doing. So
those practice sessions are going to see you even more immersed in the Cadillac team,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, and that's something that I'm looking forward to, right? Because for me, it's the ultimate goal, and the objective is to try to be there as a race driver. You know, so to kind of plug myself in and get a little bit of a look of what Valtteri and Checo get to do every weekend is going to be super cool. And it's also an opportunity for me to try to help the team and try to do a lot of learning on my own, but try to help them achieve their goal on a race weekend.
Colton, tell us then about this passion for Formula One, because looking from the outside in, you're a man who had it all in IndyCar. You were respected by your peers. You were winning races, what, second couple of years ago? Mm-hmm. Okay, the Indy 500 hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure it would have done in time. What is it about Formula One that has made you walk away from all of that?
There's a mutual respect and a mutual love for me on both fronts. You know, when I grew up as a kid, my first race, I was 2 weeks old, was an IndyCar race, right? And as soon as I kind of grew up a little bit and learned more about other motorsports, you know, my second interest was IMSA, because my father was racing there in 2006, 2007. With the Acura. And so I was really interested in those cars at that time. And then I kind of learned about Formula One a little bit later, maybe 9 or 10 years old, and got addicted to that. But for me, I'm just a motorsports fan. And there are so many things that I want to drive. But at the top of the list, right there with IndyCar, is Formula One for me on a personal level. So having this opportunity to try to get there and try to achieve that dream and that goal of being a Formula One driver, you know, I saw it as a great opportunity. It's very easy for me to say yes to. You know, for me, it's just being a motorsport fan, right? Like on my off weekend, I'm watching Formula E, or I'm watching Formula One if I'm not there, or IndyCar, NASCAR, whatever it might be, WEC. For me, I don't really follow any other sports. So it's really just motorsport. And I just like it. I like watching it. I have a great respect for a lot of different guys in the sport that do all these different racing series and whatnot. So it's cool to kind of be able to try new things. And this is the opportunity and something that I really
want.
Has
it been an odd experience for you this year? You know, like, look, have you been looking over your shoulder at what's been going on in IndyCar? I mean, like, I'm speaking to you now when IndyCar is in Long Beach, one of the iconic races.
Right.
Does it feel a bit weird being here and not there?
I would say the first few weekends they were a little bit weird, a little bit strange. Like, oh, hey, like I should, like, the last 8 years I've been there doing that. And then you change and whatnot. So just like anything, like you get a new job in life and it's a little bit weird at first, but then you get settled into it and it feels normal and natural. And that's kind of where I'm at. But, you know, it, I will say it is weird to kind of watch IndyCar races for a little bit. But no, it's been cool. It's been cool to be a fan of it.
People watching this, listening to this, mm-hmm. may not be aware that you've been on the fringes of F1 for a while. You know, 5 years ago, almost got across the line with Sauber. Then there was interest from AlphaTauri as well. And then there was the super license drama. Has all of those disappointments fueled the desire to get into Formula One even more?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think, look, this is a sport and first and foremost, it's a business, right? It's got to put out money and got to collect money. And so I understand that and I understand that side of it. But it was disappointing, you know, to have those two instances where I thought maybe not so much on the Sauber one. I thought there was a chance with that one, but the AlphaTauri deal seemed very real to me. And then, you know, when that didn't happen, I was like, look, okay, kind of getting up there in age, probably won't have another opportunity. And then this came around and I was like, geez, count my lucky stars. This is an amazing opportunity. And to have the people that are involved in it be involved in it is like super cool for me because I know them for a while now from the IndyCar side. And even walking around here, like a lot of guys from when I was racing in Europe and engineers, mechanics that I worked with or knew, it's cool. It's didn't realize how many people I knew until I came back here and I was like, oh man, yeah, know a few people from racing for a while.
It feels third time lucky, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, for me, as far as I'm concerned, I'm fully focused on making this one the one that counts and works. And so, yeah, that's the fully focused on trying to get here and dealing with my F2 career at the moment and trying to go through that side of things and learning as much as I can. So that's kind of where we're at.
This episode is sponsored by Shopify. You know that moment when you're buying something online and everything's going smoothly until you get to checkout. Suddenly you're trying to remember a password you haven't used in years or find the card you were sure was in your wallet. And then you see it, that purple Shop Pay button. One tap and everything becomes much easier. Your details are already saved and checkout takes seconds. That's Shop Pay. And it's all powered by Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world, used by big brands like Heinz and Gymshark, as well as people just getting started. If you're running your own business, Shopify gives you everything you need in one place. From ready-made templates to build your store, to AI tools that help write product descriptions and enhance images, plus email and social media tools to help you reach customers with 24/7 support if you ever need a hand. See less carts go abandoned and more sales go with Shopify and their Shop Pay button. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/beyondthegrid. Go to shopify.com/beyondthegrid. That's shopify.com/beyondthegrid.
Formula One fans know how every second counts on the track. That same intensity is what makes playoff hockey so wild. NHL on TNT has the best coverage, with every shift and game mattering. No one is just coasting. The panel is just fun to watch, especially when Paul Bissonnette is cracking jokes and Wayne Gretzky is breaking down the action. Studio coverage makes every moment feel bigger, just like a big race weekend. Watch the Stanley Cup playoffs on TNT, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max.
Colton, just a couple of questions about those two previous opportunities that didn't happen. First of all, I think it was Mario Andretti who let the cat out of the bag when he said, on the Sauber simulator, you'd been faster than Raikkonen and Giovinazzi. Is that true?
Yes, it was true. But, you know, I think it's cool to be able to say you're faster than them in the simulator, but it doesn't really mean much unless you can do it in real life. I think it's a good thing for teams to see, and then they're like, okay, maybe he's worth the investment of a test. You know, it definitely feels good when you get out of the sim, but as far as does it equate to real life success, Maybe not. But it's a cool thing to say.
He's hoping it was Barcelona as well, right?
That was at Hungary.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It was at Hungary. We did a few tracks, I think. No, we didn't on that one. That was just Hungary. But no, that was cool. And I enjoyed my time there. It's a really cool factory that they have there, and especially the wind tunnel setup that they have there. And yeah, it was neat to see all that while that was going on. And this is the first time I met Valtteri, because he was coming over from Mercedes to there. So he was doing a seat fit. And yeah, that's, fortunately nothing came of it. But yeah, it was a cool time to have a little bit of an insight into it.
And the AlphaTauri deal, there was a period of time in the F1 paddock where we were all led to believe that the deal was on.
Right.
Is that how it felt for you?
Yes and no. I really liked the straightforwardness of dealing with Dr. Marco.
And yeah, there's so no gray areas with Helmut.
Exactly. And sometimes it hurts. As a driver, you don't want to hear some things, but sometimes you need to hear them. But the good part about all of that was he's very straightforward on the possibility of it. You know, one day it was, if I had to put a percentage, maybe it's 80%. And then the next day it's like, 40. Wait, we clawed back some, maybe 60. So there was a very real possibility. You know, I had a contract from them, just unable to sign because I didn't have the super license. And, you know, they were feeling really good at a point that they thought, you know, it was going to happen. And then, but they weren't sure. And eventually I couldn't really wait too much more. I had to sign a new deal in IndyCar. And Michael and Dan were very gracious to have me back in IndyCar. And so I signed with them, which ended up being the right thing because I didn't get allowed. And I would have been... had no Formula One seat and no IndyCar seat, and don't know what I would have done then. But yeah, it was a very strange time. It was always day to day. You know, it's so hard. Even for me, I was like looking at the reports and I was like, man, these people think it's going to happen. Maybe it'll happen. And then you call Dr. Marco and he's like, well, don't be so sure. And maybe this stuff can happen. But yeah, it was very gracious of the time of like everybody of being able to go into the Red Bull sim, you know, being able to talk to Dr. Marco about the possibility of Formula One. And a lot of people took a lot of time out of their days to kind of point me in the right direction and help me out. So very gracious for that.
Had you ever had the opportunity to join the Red Bull Young Driver Program?
No, I didn't. But I wasn't really over here that long. You know, I did two seasons, British F4 and Euro Formula Open, Formula 3. I don't think I was over here long enough. I don't think I did probably enough to warrant it at that time. But no, never had any interest at that point.
Colton, let's talk about that time. You were 15 when you came over.
Yeah, I was young.
Which is really young, right?
Yeah.
Is that a difficult decision to make as a family to go to the other side
probably
of the world?
Probably if you're my mom. I think my dad was...
What did mom say?
I think she cried a little bit, but she didn't cry. She cried on the way to the airport after they had dropped me off. I was very fortunate that they let me do it. Thing was, I was living with my mechanic, so there really wasn't a lot of, who was like 20 or 21. There wasn't really a lot of supervision, and I had to really kind of grow up fast because of it, which is, well, one, it was great. I did 30 races and 25 test days in 1 year. I was in the car 2 times a week, at least.
So learned a bucket load, right?
Yeah, it was amazing. Mm. But... it also matured me extremely fast out of the race car, right? I had to learn how to cook, how to clean for myself, how to take care of myself, be like, hey, look, we have a test day here. What time do I need to get there? When's my trains leaving?
I was going to say, you didn't have a driving license, right? So how did you travel around the UK?
With the team or on a train, which thankfully you guys have a great system here in the UK that you can kind of get around the country easily if you don't have a car. It was fun to be on my own at that point. I enjoyed it, and I definitely missed my parents, but it was fun.
Was your teammate Lando Norris helpful?
Yeah.
Did you hang out?
No, I don't think we ever hung out away from the track, but we got on really well when we were at the track, and obviously with 52 days in the car, you're seeing each other a lot, and that doesn't count prep days or simulator days and whatnot. So we spent a lot of time together, and you know, still whenever he comes to Vegas, we'll play golf and whatnot, and we'll see each other. But he was great. I think we got on really well. We learned a lot from each other and really pushed each other that year. It was very, very enjoyable because it was all about driving that year.
I remember just before your McLaren test in 2022, which we'll come on to in a minute, I remember Lando saying, Colton's quick. Colton's really quick. Very quick through fast corners as well.
It's a good thing. Good thing I was making money doing oval racing. Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe. You know, I think once
very
you
complimentary. I suppose.
Once you reach the top, everybody's talent's so close, so it's hard to kind of stand out when you're learning at that age. I think there's maybe a little bit more disparity between drivers, just because you have a natural talent, and then you have to refine everything, and that's where kind of your weaknesses are smaller. Once you kind of get up and through the ranks and whatnot, you learn more about yourself and your driving style to make that style better. But yeah, no, I definitely was not scared of anything at that point.
How different is the racing culture in the UK compared to the US? I mean, is the language the same? Is oversteer still oversteer and understeer still understeer?
I think it's pretty similar, right? There's some small things that they would say are different, or we call parts something different. But I think the biggest thing is the passion is there on both sides. If you're in America, the fans are incredibly passionate. If you're here, they're incredibly passionate. And that's the most important thing when you're working at a team, and you want the guys to love what they do and enjoy it, because it's not an easy thing to be like, hey, look, you're going to be gone for 24 weekends or whatever. And then not only that, you're going to fly back on Sunday, and you're going to work from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Monday. And then you're going to fly again on Thursday and go somewhere else. So passion is kind of what drives everybody in the sport and what gets everybody into it in the first place. And that's really important.
Is the intensity different in Europe? Because I've heard a lot of drivers talk about this, and the reason, you know, people come to Europe is because the racing intensity is slightly different. Or is that a myth?
I've always thought, like, it doesn't matter where you go, there's going to be somebody that's fast, and that's somebody that's going to be hard to beat. Like, if you were to go to the middle of Iowa, in the middle of nowhere in the cornfields, and there's a go-kart track there, there'll be some kid that all he does is drive around that go-kart track and will give you a really hard time at beating him. So I think that part, no, I think you'll find quick people anywhere in the world, and specialists at any sort of racing or any sort of track. I think there's an incredible ability to learn in Europe. I think because the engineers in junior formula are really way more focused on driver development than I would say in the US. And so I think that's maybe where the difference is and where you would come over here for. I think you drive a lot more over here for the most part. And because of that, maybe a lot more people come to Europe from racing, as far as like from North America, South America, Asia and whatnot. So I think you're going to find fast people anywhere. I think it's that ability to learn is probably a little bit greater here, and the track time that you get is probably a little bit greater here than anywhere else in the world.
What about at home? Because we've talked about your mum's reaction to you coming to Europe, but of course, you know, your dad, you said, you know, he was racing in IMSA, one of your earliest memories, but you know, dad was a great racing driver, Brian Herter, IndyCar, Champ Car and IRL winner and things. Was it inevitable that you were going to become a racing driver, given what he was doing?
Well, no, because I have two siblings, and they have no interest in being race car drivers. But
Have they karted?
They've all tried it. But for me, it was like I was always pushing for it. So I think early on, I was maybe 5 years old when I started asking, hey, can I get a go-kart and whatnot? And it's probably came from Dario Franchitti, Dan Weldon, and Tony Kanaan, who were teammates with him in IndyCar at the time, were saying, hey, you should get a go-kart. I probably didn't know what a go-kart was. And I was like, hey, can I get a go-kart?
And they were kind of saying that to wind your old man
up,
probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But he never pressured me into racing. I think he was happy as long as I found something that kind of satisfied me in life. And so I think he likes it even more that it's racing because he can relate to it well. But it's never pressured. So I started asking around 5.5 years old for a go-kart. And so he said, okay, rented one, went out and did a track day. And I was hooked immediately. They got me a go-kart for my 6th birthday. And that's when I started racing. And I guess the rest is history, as they say. But yeah, it was never anything else. They made me do normal sports growing up, baseball, football, soccer, but I never had an interest in any of it. When I was practicing for those, I was always thinking of, I'd rather be at the go-kart track right now driving.
Right. And dad was a great open wheel racer. Did he harbor Formula One ambitions?
Yeah, I think he thought about it. He
drove a Minardi two-seater at Donington, I remember.
At Donington, yeah. Justin Wilson was also testing that day, I think, in the Jag. He was actually pretty close at one point on that deal of getting like three races.
In the Minardi?
Yeah.
With Paul Stoddart. It was probably that era of Minardi, was it? I can't, yeah.
Beyond and before me. But much like me, he's a fan of motorsport as a whole. And with that came for sure probably an ambition for Formula One at one point. But then, you know, I think it got to the point where me and my sister were born, and it was probably going to be difficult to relocate the whole family and whatnot, and stayed in IndyCar. But yeah, it was, it's definitely where my love come from. My first race was the Long Beach Grand Prix, and I was 2 weeks old. So I was almost born at the racetrack. And when you're brought up around it, I didn't know any better. My mom told me one time, I was on her shoulders at chain link fence, like watching the race cars go by. There was a kid next to me. I turned to him and I said, which one's your dad? So it just didn't, I didn't know any better. It was just like, this is how life is. And everybody's dad drives cars, and that's so cool. But it's just like anything in life. I think you look up to your parents, and I definitely look up to mine. And you see what they do, and you kind of gravitate towards it.
And so you would watch the F1 races with dad at some silly hour of the night?
Yeah, I think that kind of came later, a little bit older, probably around 9 or 10. It was something that you know, I always liked to do was watch racing with him, you know, because he's so busy on weekends usually. So when we get a weekend off and we can watch racing, it was kind of rare.
So let's talk about F2 now. Is it what you're expecting?
I didn't really have an expectation going in. You know, I didn't know what it was going to be like. I didn't know exactly what the car, what the tire combination, what the engine was going to be like or what it was going to feel like. So I didn't set any expectations as far as, you know, how this is going to feel or how it's going to look mentally in my head. But no, I think it's been enjoyable so far. Very important for my learning. And I think as far as learning tracks and more importantly, how the tire kind of reacts is a big part.
That's one of the things Romain Grosjean said to me when he made the switch over to IndyCar. He said, it's like an F2 car, just different tires. Do you see that comparison between IndyCar and F2?
I do not. But yes.
What are the main differences then?
You know, I think just like the feel of the car and how the power is put down and how the gears shift and, you know, obviously the tire deck that you have over here is greater, but the seating position is different, how the power is put down is different, the sound is different. So there's a lot of differences that don't really kind of key into like the back of my brain is like, oh, this is an IndyCar. But that's just me personally.
Just a quick question on the aero screen that you have in IndyCar versus the halo. Has the halo taken a bit of getting used to? Or
no, pretty not at all. Yeah, well, because we have the aero screen, but we still have the bar down the front.
So you still have
so
the pillar.
So it's kind of like the halo, yeah, but just with the
just
added
cooler
protection. Yes, it's definitely nice to have like wind back and be able to feel some wind. Man, when the early days of those, I'm going to speak in Fahrenheit because I don't know exactly what the equation would be, but it was... We had a race at Indy. It was 150 degrees in the cockpit Fahrenheit. I'm going to guess that's probably around 45, maybe more, 50 Celsius. But so it was incredibly hot. I remember guys were getting out. Like a few guys were really hurting. But yeah, and then you come over here and you have the wind back. It's so nice. I completely forgot about that until we got back over here. And I was like, yeah, feels good.
This episode is sponsored by Vanta. One thing that's changed in business over the last few years is that it's no longer enough to just say you take security seriously. Increasingly, companies have to prove it before anyone will even consider working with them. That's exactly the kind of challenge Vanta is built to help with. What I like about Vanta is how it automates the compliance process and brings compliance, risk, and customer trust together on one AI-powered platform. So whether you're preparing for a SOC 2 or managing a larger enterprise GRC program, Vanta helps keep everything organized and moving in the right direction. Companies like Ramp and Writer spend 82% less time on audits when they use Vanta. So it's not just faster compliance, it also gives you more time to focus on growing the business. Over 10,000 companies from startups to large enterprises trust Vanta to help them prove security and build customer confidence. So get started at vanta.com/grid. That's Vanta.com/grid.
Formula One fans know how every second counts on the track. That same intensity is what makes playoff hockey so wild. NHL on TNT has the best coverage, with every shift and game mattering. No one is just coasting. The panel is just fun to watch, especially when Paul Bissonnette is cracking jokes and Wayne Gretzky is breaking down the action. Studio coverage makes every moment feel bigger, just like a big race weekend. Watch the Stanley Cup playoffs on TNT, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max.
What about the format? Because that is different. You're now in F2. What is it? It's the one practice session and straight into quality.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a wake-up call, right?
Yeah, it is. Especially if you throw the car in the wall in practice, like in Melbourne. Practice time is so important. You know, when you have 40 minutes of it, not only do you have 40 minutes of it, you have one set of tires. You can't do that many laps in 40 minutes, and then the added pressure if you only have one set, so then you can do even less laps. So it's definitely like you got to get up to speed quick, need to learn fast, and that's kind of like the name of the game in Formula 2 is if you can kind of get on the weekend with your best foot forward, you're probably going to have a good weekend because there's very little time to catch up and recover. So that's kind of the learning process of what it is.
You're kind of the elder statesman as well.
I am, yeah. I was thinking about this. I was like, well, it made me feel old now that I race against Juan Pablo Montoya in IndyCar, and now I race against his kid in F2, even though I'm only 26, right? It's like, still not old. But that was like, man, yeah, when you're racing everybody and they're like 18 years old, it's like, man, makes you feel a little bit older.
That gap between 18 and 26 is fascinating because you've been that person in IndyCar, the youngest ever race winner back in 2019 at COTA. When you look back on that person now, how much have you changed as a driver? What didn't you know back then?
Not as much as you'd think. I would say probably by the time you're like 16, 17 in a race car, you're pretty close to what your maximum ability is going to be as far as like qualifying pace, like one lap pace behind the wheel. You're not going to get much faster. I mean, you might find a tenth and a half, two tenths here, there, whatever, but it's not going to be, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm a second off. Maybe when I get older, I'll be better. It doesn't work like that. As far as the raw speed, I don't think anything's really changed for me. The alertness and the awareness going through a race, how I look at things is very different now. So I guess the maturing of it is you have to make these mistakes and learn through them that way. It's really hard to see like, oh, I should be doing this or whatever until it happens. And you're like, okay, bank that, remember that for the future. And that's kind of the bigger difference is the maturity like inside the car and the race management grows a lot.
It's so interesting to hear you say this because I only yesterday was having a debate with someone about what's been Lewis Hamilton's best season in Formula One. And I maintain that I think his best season was 2007, his first alongside Alonso in McLaren.
Incredibly quick.
And he did 9 consecutive podiums to start his Formula One career. It went round the outside of Alonso at turn one in his first Grand Prix. And the person I was talking to was saying, but how can that be? Because you're surely going to get better with experience and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you do, right? There's probably points of that year that if you ask him, he'll probably be like, well, yeah, if I was more mature, I'd probably win the championship because I do this one or two things differently.
I would have pitted earlier in China is what he would say.
Well,
yeah.
Yes. But there's so many things that you kind of learn through the years. And you're like, well, man, if I did this a little differently, maybe my life would be a little different. I would have won here. But no, yeah, it's all about the maturity. And he was, I think he was, what, 21 when he came into Formula One?
Tiny bit older than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, younger than you.
Right. Well, yeah.
2 years. I think he was 24.
You know, I think nowadays he's probably on the older side of Formula One guys coming in. So he had probably a pretty good deal of maturity mentally outside the race car. But it doesn't always translate to inside the race car. You still need to learn things. But yeah, incredibly quick.
Is your mind as malleable as it was when you were 18? So like, you know, you've learned how to drive an Indy car brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah.
You're having to do new things now. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that process of learning to do things differently easy?
some yes and some no, right? Like there's still some things that you really have to do a few times and to get it. But also, yeah, there are some things where it's like, hey, look, I've done this before and I've gone through this process. And so that maybe picks up a little bit easier. But as part of racing is you're always going to get better, right? Like it doesn't matter if you're 63 years old and you're still driving. Maybe you don't have the speed that you once had, but mentally you're still going to pick up on things. You're still going to learn things and how to better yourself, right? Like guys like Lewis or Max, they're still going to get better and they're still going to learn more. Even if the speed kind of drops off at some point, you still learn.
Do you see these two added F2 races in Miami and Montreal as an advantage for you? Because actually the tracks are going to be new to everybody and not only you, which was going to be the case elsewhere.
It definitely helps, for sure. Yeah, you go to a place like Melbourne where I think a lot of guys have been in Formula 3 and whatnot. You know, it kind of closes down on the track learning, or they'd been there previously in F2, I don't know. But yeah, like you said, Miami, Montreal is going to be new for everybody. I'm pretty sure that nobody's ever been around there in anything other than a simulator. And for me, I'm just looking forward to it because two races in North America, which is going to be awesome. You know, in Canada, that's going to be a cool place. I've always heard Montreal's a sweet city and the track looks amazing. So I'm looking forward to that one. And then Miami is, it's great. I think none of us were expecting to have a home race for F2 in the US this year. And yeah, I feel very fortunate for it.
What about Valtteri and Checo? Have they been helpful to you, whether it's from a Formula One point of view or, I mean, Valtteri didn't do GP2, but Checo did. Has he been able to give you any advice on whether it's F2 or F1?
Whenever we've had discussions, it hasn't kind of gone towards that. It's been more catered toward Formula One and more so me steering the ship of like, hey, how's this feel and whatnot? Like I'm usually asking them questions, and when they do ask me questions, usually it's about IndyCar. They have interest and I think they find that part interesting. But no, it's we don't really talk about Formula 2 or haven't. I think when they did it, when Checo did it, it was very different, probably on Bridgestone at that point, maybe.
I think they probably were. Yes, Checo's 29-10, I think he was doing it, wasn't he? Yeah.
So in a very different chassis for sure.
So what does success look like for you this year in F2?
I think progression, you know, that's the biggest thing to look at. Where I started in Melbourne, it's great to finish seventh on Sunday, but you know, progression and finishing inside the points as much as possible. Eventually you want to get to the point where you win and you're qualifying on poles. Like that's every driver's goal. Is it's kind of like, what are you doing this if it's not to win? So that's obviously the main goal, but progression and learning would be kind of a simpler goal.
And having been in the thick of it, do you think winning is achievable?
100%. Yeah, I don't think I'd be here if I didn't think I could win or compete. That's a huge part of I think any driver's DNA is they are an arrogant breed, I'd say. Mm. And we always think that we're probably best, and we always
Colton,
think
I was
that,
coming from an angle of it's so different for you. And the,
oh,
you know,
100%.
You know.
Well, it's very different, but you know, that's what's so important about this year. So you get to learn. You get to learn what to do, what not to do, you know, before hopefully, ultimately, you end up in Formula One.
And have you given yourself a time scale with the whole F1 thing?
No. You know, I think it's day-to-day focus, right? Like right now, the only thing I care about in life is getting to Miami in the prep work before we get there. Once that's over, all I'm going to focus on is getting to Montreal and the sim days and the prep work to get there and have success. And so it's all about seeing, you know, a week or two ahead of myself.
And has that always been your attitude to racing?
Yeah, I think so. I think it helps me kind of compartmentalize things and helps me kind of focus on one thing and not be worried about, you know, oh, we got this test day or this track. And so it kind of helps me stay focused on what's most important, which for me at this moment is get my seat fit done. So Cadillac has my full attention right now and getting comfortable and learning about the Formula One car with some of the engineers here. And then tomorrow it'll be Miami prep, sim, and fully focused with Hi-Tech.
Hi-Tech are just down the road. So you're able to dovetail the Cadillac and the Hi-Tech.
It's perfect.
Aspects of your life,
yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah. I think that was a big kind of reason why it looked so good to go with Hi-Tech. Obviously, the results speak for itself, and the team is incredible. Great engineering and great infrastructure, and I really like Ollie. We were talking about that before.
Yeah, Ollie,
like
Ollie Oaks,
the team boss. Yeah, and so yeah, that's just made it a little bit better when they're like, "Hey, look, we're right here with the Cadillac team. It's easy to get back and forth."
You're a man who doesn't like to sit in the comfy seat. That's what I'm learning. Always pushing yourself, right?
I guess, but it's important. I think as a race car driver, or I mean, I don't need to lecture people on life or give some philosophical thing, but for me, it's important to always be progressing in my sport and what I do and what I want to achieve in life. It's, you need to.
You're also doing the IMSA Enduro races as well for Cadillac, aren't
you?
Just tell us a little bit about that experience. How different is the car to anything you've driven before?
Yeah, that thing's very different, but it's so sick, especially, you know, when you do the bump start and massive displacement V8 kicks in, and you can feel it coming down pit lane. You know that it's the caddy coming, and the sound is amazing. You don't get many naturally aspirated engines anymore in the world, and so it's pretty cool when you get to drive one. That was the first time that I can remember that I drove a naturally aspirated engine. So shows you kind of how rare it is nowadays, and with turbocharged engines and now with hybrid engines. So it's super cool. Such a good team and car.
Is it close to F1 performance? Because I want to talk to you now about the McLaren test you did at Portimao as well. But are there parallels in how you drive that with how you drive an F1 car?
Yeah. And I would say the most parallels are how advanced they are, right? Like what you can do from the driver's seat as far as changes inside the cockpit, I would say is almost identical to what I found in Formula One.
Okay. Well, can we talk? So it's July 2022.
Yeah.
You're heading off to Portimao for a 2-day test with McLaren. What were your expectations and how did they compare to the reality?
I think just grateful for the opportunity. You know, I didn't know what to expect. I know people say like, oh man, the braking's going to be so crazy and the cornering, acceleration. The thing that got me was the acceleration, but just how linear it is. It's like it just keeps going. Right, when you drive a car, for the most part, you get to a part of like VMAX where it starts tipping off, and then like this is as fast as the car is going to go. But that thing, like, it just never reached
just
it.
Just
kept going,
pulled.
Just kept going, and it felt like the same amount of torque in second gear as fifth gear. And so that was the most impressive part to me. I think the braking, even though it was later than the IndyCar, it felt comparable in my mind. And obviously the cornering's high, but that wasn't anything that was like. It's impressive, but it wasn't like, whoa, the acceleration. That was what like was weird to me, because I kept like pulling my head back like, oh man, it's got to stop eventually. And it's like, nope, just keeps going.
Also, Portimao is a great racetrack as well.
Awesome.
Isn't it?
It's the first time I've been there.
Right. And it's kind of, it really plays to the strengths of an F1 car as well. I think there's some quick corners and.
Yeah. Late apexes, double apex corners, off camber. It's got a little bit of everything. Great elevation change, high speed, low speed. It's a great track to test at because it gives you a little bit of a feel for every corner that you might experience in a Formula One track.
You mentioned the braking and the accelerating, but what was your abiding memory of that car? I mean, Mark Temple, your engineer, told me at the time that you were really impressive from the get-go. But I suppose what was the hardest thing for you?
I think just getting comfortable, right? When you only have a 2-day test, the first day is really just spent getting comfortable and learning by overdriving a little bit, right? So you might go into a corner and you might roll, you know, 10K extra speed into it and be like, whoa, 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 big shuffle, you know, end up a few car lengths wide at the apex and then come back. And so the second day, you need to refine all that, right? You had a night's sleep, you come back, you know what to do now a little bit more. And you need to be able to refine that. That's the most important thing. And so the first day was all kind of sporadic driving a little bit, trying to learn as quick as possible by overstepping the line. And then day two is all about performing, right? And maximum performance and really trying to nail every time I got in the car and just corner by corner. Okay, this is where I'm going to brake this time. Oop, maybe a little bit early, go a few meters later. But no, it was very enjoyable. And it's cool to be able to drive a car that's won a race in Formula One too.
True. It was the 2021 McLaren that Daniel Ricciardo won at Monza.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy all the data, pouring through the data? Did you learn a lot from it?
Yeah. It's a really cool thing. That for me, like there's nothing better in life than finding lap time. There's nothing more satisfying in life than finding lap time, because it takes a lot of time and effort to do it, right? Like the engineers will tell you that's their job, and countless nights for them up super late trying to find lap time. And then when you can find it, you know, go a tenth quicker, two tenths quicker than what you thought was possible, it feels pretty satisfying.
Colton, it's been so great to chat and get to know you. You're obsessed with racing. That's what I've learned. Do you have time for hobbies? You mentioned that you'll play golf with Lando. Is that a big thing for you? Do you watch the Masters last week?
Of course. Yeah. Enjoy golf, cycling a bit, running.
Are you still drumming?
I haven't drummed in probably a year.
Oh, hang on. What happens to the band then?
It's been gone for a while now, just because I think everyone went to work.
What do you call yourselves? The Zibs, is that
Zibs,
right?
Yeah.
Everyone's got a job.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that was enjoyable. But no, I haven't drummed in a while.
Where did the drumming come from?
My parents wanted all of us to learn instruments growing up. I started on piano and hated it, and so then I started playing drums and enjoyed it a bit more.
Future Charlie Watts.
I don't know about that. I need a little bit more practice.
You need to get the band back together. That's what
we'll see. For the right price, Stefano, we'll come play an F1 race.
Come on, Miami. You're going to be there, right? Sunday night in Miami. Colton, thank you very much for your time. It's been great to chat, and good luck with everything. I think a lot of people admire the big step that you've taken, and let's hope it pays off.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
I loved this conversation, partly because Colton's so engaging, but also because I learned so much about the man. Colton's a passionate racer. As he said, he'll watch any motorsport on TV, and he wants to get into F1, having earned his colours. The racing in F2 is hard, and there will be no free passes for Colton this year, but there's already an inner belief in him that he can succeed. And if he wins in F2, then he'll have taken a massive step closer to his dream of Formula One. Colton, many thanks for your time, and I look forward to seeing you in Miami next weekend. And you can follow Colton's season on the F2 website, formula2.com. Plus, there are race highlights on YouTube, and you can watch full races on F1 TV. And Colton's Cadillac team principal, Graham Loudon, is on the latest episode of F1 Explains, answering your questions. And on F1 Nation, another IndyCar race winner, James Hinchcliffe, Jolyon Palmer and I have been building the perfect F1 driver. So why not check that out as well? Thank you very much for listening, and I will, of course, be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.